From claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt.
EWTN Radio presents The Miracle Hunter with Michael O'Neill.
Welcome to The Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm The Miracle Hunter. One type of miracle or miraculous phenomena that all types of faiths like to discuss are encounters with angels. We have these cases throughout Catholic Church history, these approved appearances of St. Michael at Mount St. Michel in France, which I'll be visiting shortly. And we have other cases of smaller encounters, which are not documented or approved by the Catholic Church, you might say. And throughout other traditions and other faiths, you have different encounters with angels. There's a brand new book that's come out from Odile Helmont from Sophia Institute Press. We're going to be talking about that book today, Encounters with Angels, some incredible stories that really are uplifting and inspiring and remind us of these supernatural realities that are with us every moment of the day. And later in the show, we'll be talking about Purgatory, both the concept and the new film that's out named Purgatory with producer Oscar Delgado. The national release of that film is on October 25th and 28th in theaters. So I encourage people to check that one out. And we're looking forward to this interview with Oscar to find out what went into this film about a tricky topic, that space in between heaven and hell. Not everybody believes in purgatory, but maybe this movie will open the doors to that. And of course, out this week in stores is my brand new book, They Might Be Saints. It connects with my television series here on EWTN that airs weekly on Mondays at 11:30 a.m. Eastern Time or Fridays at 5 p.m. Eastern Time. We look at Americans on the Path to Sainthood and the Search for Canonization Miracles. And for those people who like that show, like those half-hour snippets into the life of the saint, you might say, we have a new book that's out. It's 24 Blesseds and Venerables from the United States. And we look at each of their lives in a very deep way, try to tell those stories of how they were real people who figured out a way to walk that path of sainthood. And hopefully we'll find it inspiring for some people. People can check that out at EWTNRC.com. For more information, and I'll be on Father Mitch Pacwa's EWTN live show and also a bookmark coming up to discuss They Might Be Saints, the book. Let's take a look at the 365 Days with Mary project. We do this every week, and later in the show, we'll be talking about Holy Mary of the Plains from Santa Rosa in Argentina in the year 1986. We'll be also looking at the Might Be Saint of the Day later in the show. It's Blessed Richard Crea, living from 1523 to 1586 from Ireland. And the question of the day is a hard one. I'll do my best to try to answer it. What if the sun miracle of Fatima destroys my daughter's faith rather than builds it up? I'll see if I can give a chance at getting that one right. That's a tricky one. Let's take a look at the miracle news before that. And so on the last Fatima appearance, that would be October 13th, Pope Francis gave his advice on how to meet Mary every day. So he gave on the anniversary of the miracle of the sun, Pope Francis prayed that Mary's light would free us from evil. And his quote was, "Today we remember the last apparition of Our Lady of Fatima," Pope Francis recalled at the end of his October 13th general audience. And of course, just this past week, we celebrated October 13th, 1917, which was the sixth and final of the Marian apparitions in Fatima, Portugal, that had started on May 13th of that same year. And calling herself Our Lady of the Rosary, Mary appeared to three little shepherd children and urged Christians to practice penance, to pray the rosary daily, and to have devotion to her Immaculate Heart for the conversion of sinners. And on that date of the final apparition, the miracle of the sun occurred. It was witnessed by, they say, 70,000 people, and the sun danced, and it brought many people to believe that Our Lady really was appearing there to the little shepherd children. And so Pope Francis said that he entrusts all to the Mother of God, that she may accompany you with maternal tenderness on your journey and be a comfort to you in the trials of life. And he prayed that Mary would be our guide on the path to continual conversion and penance so that we might encounter Christ, the Son of Justice, and may her light free us from every evil and dispel the darkness of this world. End quote. And he spoke to the Portuguese faithful about their beloved Our Lady of Fatima, and he urged them to strengthen their sense of feeling close to the Church and living within the Church, persevering in the daily prayer of the Rosary. And in this way, he said, you'll be able to meet the Virgin Mother every day, learning from her to cooperate fully with the plans of salvation which God has for each of you. May the Lord bless you and your loved ones," end quote. So that was Pope Francis reflecting on the Sun Miracle of Fatima, the very last of those apparitions to the three shepherd children of Our Lady of Fatima. And for more information on this, you can check out the Facebook feed of The Miracle Hunter. I've got this story posted, as well as each week we post all the miracle news happening all around the world and those things that relate to miracles. So people can check that out at the Facebook feed of The Miracle Hunter. Let's take a look at Catholic Pub Trivia. We do this every week where we look at a trivia question and give out a prize to an emailer who writes in the fastest with the right answer. Last week, we were talking with Dr. Mary Soha about the canonical crowning of Our Lady of La Leche that happened last Sunday. And we asked that question, name another statue of the Virgin Mary in the United States that has been given such an honor as a canonical crowning. And one example that you might have is Our Lady of Prompt Succor, and that is in New Orleans. And so there'll be a new episode, actually, of that on the program Explore with the Miracle Hunter, a new television program on EWTN, airing next year. So check that one out when it comes. This week's question for the question of the week on Catholic Pub Trivia is a question of today we're talking about Encounters with Angels, a brand new book from Sophia Institute Press. And so the question is, how many angels are given names in the Bible? So again, the question is, how many angels are mentioned by name in the Bible? If you think you know that question, why don't you win the prize, the image of the faces of Mary? Send me an email to miraclehunter@ewtn.com, and maybe we'll be answering your question on the air next week. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we'll be talking about the fascinating world of angels in the brand new book, Encounters with Angels, with Odile Aumont. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. People of all faiths have an interest in angels. It seems to be one of the universal points of miracles across the board. You might say healing miracles are another one, but when it comes to belief in supernatural entities, they don't necessarily, everything doesn't always line up, but angels seem to be across the board a point of belief that's consistent among different faith traditions. Now, there's a brand new book that's out that I'm really enjoying. It's a new book from Sophia Institute Press. It's called Encounters with Angels, The Invisible Companions of Our Spiritual Life, and it's by Odile Aumont. And today joining us, we have Michael Litchens, who is spokesperson and editor for this book. And this is an exciting book to look at because I think everybody is kind of interested in angels, and we want to know what's knowable about angels and what's sort of just sort of made up along the way. And so, Michael, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much, Michael. It's great to join you guys again.
Thank you. And when we look at angels just in general, before we dive into this book, why do you think it is that it's true that across different faiths, we have such an interest and fascination in angels?
I wonder about that sometimes myself, because this was a book I got to talk about on a non-Christian radio program. And what surprised me was how open everyone was. And I think it's because, honestly, that because they're those messengers, they're that kind of bridge between us and the impossibleness of God. That's something we can kind of conceive, even though it's still outside of our imagination. But other than that, it's a mystery to me why people are so open to learning about angels.
And it seems like in different religious traditions, the angels are represented in their sacred texts as well. So there's some support in each of those religions for angels. When we look at the book Encounters with Angels, The Invisible Companions of Our Spiritual Life from Odile Aumont, what would you say is different about this book? There are many books about angels. How does this book tackle the book slightly differently?
Oh, well, I'd say that what makes this book so unique is the particular prose and style that Wilhelm Humont employs to this. She is a fascinating figure over in the French Francophone Catholic world, editor of a magazine herself. She's written several books. And I think her particular talent is she is able to fit so many stories about angels and saints or angels in their locations and put them into very tiny stories. Like, she'll take something that would take me probably close to 30 minutes to talk, retell, and she could tell it in a paragraph. So you just get dozens of encounters with angels coming right at you. And I think that's what makes it unique, is just so many stories.
Now, I think that when we talk about angels, I think you always have to talk about these classes or choirs of angels. I think that's one of the basics of understanding angels, because we have angels, and then we have archangels and a whole bunch of others. How does this book, and in general, how does Catholicism sort of organize the kingdom of angels?
There are nine classes of angels within the hierarchy, and within each choir, there's been grouped in by three. The absolute highest of the angels are the seraphim, the cherubim, and the thrones. And I think what I love about these particular angels is when you actually get their description in Scripture, they're almost terrifying. It sounds like they're just terrifying. You know, they're described as many-eyed, and, you know, then there's the six-winged angels. And then below that, you have the thrones, the virtues, the powers, and, of course, our guardian angels, which each of us is assigned at birth.
Absolutely. And angels play an important role. I think we talk about them being fully present in the Mass and liturgy, and they play a role in the lives of the faithful. Even at the point of our death, I think angels can play an important part. So what would you say is the role of angels in a person's life all the way up to the point of death?
They are, I'm spacing on which pope said this, but they described the guardian angels as our personal patron saint, someone that's there for us to guide us and to pray for us. And what really is fascinating when you look at that is their job doesn't stop at the moment of your death, because our journey doesn't stop. We're not done until we finally face the judgment seat of God. Of course, we're Catholics, so we can even have purgatory. And that's where an angel can still continue to act as a personal patron saint, praying for you, working on your behalf. And in the case of Padre Pio, he would actually send his guardian angel to people to comfort them, something that several of his followers believe he still does even after death.
And when we reflect on angels, we always think of them as these powerful spiritual entities, and there are guides, perhaps there are a bridge between heaven and earth, and we should lean on them, and so to speak, for help along the way.
Yes.
But who are they related to us? Like, for example, our thoughts. Can they read our thoughts or know our soul? I mean, where do they cross the line as far as where their powers are?
To get off topic from this book, I think actually Father Gabriel Morth, the famous exorcist, had some really clever insights into this. And he noted that angels and demons, because they're not omniscient like the Lord Almighty, they don't know everything, so they can't read our thoughts. They're not going to be able to hear anything that's going inside ourselves. That said, as Morth pointed out, these are ancient, timeless beings. They can probably guess, they can probably understand, they can discern what you're going to think, going to say, and this is how the demons can tempt us, but this is also how angels can guide us, is through those. But church documents, as far as I understand, states that they can't read our thoughts to that level.
And when we look at angels, we look at them to assist us in our times of temptation. I think that's one of the great roles that they have. We can call upon them, and they can aid us. What
What role do you see angels playing in our lives in helping us in our times of struggle?
Oh, yeah. To go back to Padre Pio, I saw his particular devotion to his guardian angel heavily during the COVID-19 shutdowns. And this comes up in this book in a really touching way, but one of the things that we believe in the Catholic Church is that if we're not able to make it to Mass, this was usually for shut-ins and people who were, for health reasons, unable to make it, they could send their guardian angel. And in a couple cases, we know of angels who would bring the Eucharist to people when they were unable to make it to Mass. Excuse me. And this was a devotion that came up throughout COVID-19 when many of us couldn't make it to Mass because it was shut down or health reasons, things like that. People could pray and ask their guardian angel to go and attend Mass so that you could kind of be there in person. But in many saints' lives, such as St. Gemma, the guardian angel would go a step further and, like I said, bring the Eucharist to the person who was unable to make it. And I think that demonstrates kind of how they're there in the spiritual way, but once in a while can manifest in that physical way for certain saints.
Absolutely. We're talking today with Michael Litchens, who's a promoter and editor of the book Encounters with Angels for Sophia Institute Press. We've got a new book called Encounters with Angels, The Invisible Companions of Our Spiritual Life from Odile Almont. And this is a great book about angels. I think so many people are fascinated by this topic. And when we look at angel stories, I mean, we have plenty of stories in the Bible where angels play an important role both coming to Mary and otherwise. But we hear stories of angels, I don't know, a broken down car in a desert or something where, you know, there's an intercession of an angel in a big way where they might appear as a human, but something remarkable happens. What does Odile have to say about these occasions where we feel that there are angelic presences in our own lives?
She talks about that even going back to the Old Testament, of course. One of the strangest encounters that you can find, it's not necessarily angelic, but it was angelic. In fact, it was an angel of the Lord, but Balaam and his donkey who began to speak. That was a bizarre encounter that goes way above and beyond, but there are stories also of saints of cases. I'm sorry, Benoit Wernicke recalls in the 19th century that several people had felt themselves being told not to go to Paris during the Revolution is one particular case. And there's also cases coming into even the 20th century where angels encounter people to pull them back in a physical way from danger or to rescue them from a last minute accident. And what she notes in all of this is that it's rare, it's not something that a lot of people will encounter, and in fact, most people who encounter it are still not sure what they encountered due to the physical and supernatural nature, but it does show that these angels are with us. They do, in fact, help us, and in not just temptations, as we talked about earlier, but they have been known to help us and to physically assist us, and she recommends gratitude, as all the church fathers do, when especially speaking of your guardian angel, to have gratitude for what they do, especially for those times you didn't know that they intervened.
Absolutely. We're talking today with Michael Litchens about the brand new book, Encounters with Angels, from Sophia Institute Press. And when we look at angels, and we're wrapping up the interview today, if you wanted to leave the audience with what they can get out of this book, I mean, I think that perhaps this book can open people's eyes to the role of angels, and they play a role in the choices people make. I guess the book can lead people to more effectively place themselves under the protection of their guardian angels. What would you say the author in this book is hoping for when people pick up this book, Encounter with Angels?
I would say Madame Humant was aiming especially for her five children, to show them that that personal patron saint nature of angels, especially when you look at people like Padre Pio, and Saint Gemma Galangi, and you see that they had a real friendship and a real love and affection for their guardian angel because they saw someone there that God didn't leave them alone. And when we realize that God assigned us an angel, that means each and every one of us is part of God's plan and part of God's kingdom. And even if we can't see it right now, we know that we're part of God's plan because he sent an angel to guide us and to guard us. And if we can imitate the saints, we'll find ourselves a lot more thankful and full of joy at God's work.
Wonderful. Very well put. Well, we're so grateful to you, Michael Litchens, for joining us on today's program as a promoter and editor of this book, Encounters with Angels, the Invisible Companions of Our Spiritual Life. It's Odile Almont is the author of the book. People can get this at sophiainstitute.com or anywhere Catholic books are sold. We're so grateful to you, Michael, for joining us and shedding some light on that world of angels.
And thank you, Michael. It's always a joy to be here with you guys.
Thank you. And that was Michael Litchens with Encounters with Angels, a brand new book, The Invisible Companions of Our Spiritual Life. Check that one out. I think people are fascinated by angels, and this book really gets into great detail about them, and you'll learn quite a bit. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we'll be trying to answer the question of the week. What if the miracle of the Son of Fatima is confusing and causing me to lose my faith? Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter. On EWTN, here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show at EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. Hey, I love getting your questions. People write in from around the world with questions about miracles happening in today's world and those that have happened centuries ago. And I love trying to answer these questions. And when I give talks around the country in non-coronavirus years, I think things are opening up a little bit. I've got a few speaking engagements booked for next year already. But when I give a talk, I speak for about 45 minutes or so. And then when I'm done at the end, for about 15 minutes to 2 hours, sometimes these things go on forever, which is great. People have questions, and hopefully I have answers. And so when we try to answer these questions, we talk about these things that people have been wondering about for a long time. And something in a recent question came to my mind or came to my attention, and it's a tough one. I don't really know how to answer it, but I'll read you the question, and we'll see how we answer this thing. So the question was, Dear Miracle Hunter, my daughter is a practicing Catholic, attending Mass each week, etc., but recently learned about the miracle of the Son at Fatima, and she found it to be very strange and confusing, not really that Catholic, not sure what it means, and she questioned how it could be truly an event of the Catholic Church. So her faith has been rattled by it, and she has been bothered by how much emphasis the Church places on it this time of year. Do you have any advice on how I might console her or redirect her or address this topic to help save her faith? Thank you, Sarah. Well, thanks, Sarah, for your question. And that's a tough one, and that's a lot of pressure here. I'm not sure what to say, because most people, actually, who hear about the miracle of the Son at Fatima, where 70,000 people were gathered, and this is at the sixth apparition and on October 13th, that's when Lucia points up to the sky to look at the sun, and everybody who's in the crowd, who's drenched in rain, they start to, freaking out because the sun is descending to the earth at full speed, and sun is spinning and in colors, and the sun seems to settle back, and then everybody's clothes are dry all of a sudden. And this is a phenomenon that was seen by believers and atheists and the whole deal, and seen on site and off site. And it was sort of a major event, perhaps the largest modern miracle witnessed event that we have in our Catholic Church. And so the question is, what if somebody were to hear about this, and this is a true story, in fact, that this woman's daughter learned about this and found it to be kind of troubling. What if somebody found out about this and it kind of rattled them and bothered them and it confused them? So you know, in the case of where a miracle doesn't actually help someone's faith, and we kind of hope that when you hear stories of healings or even these stranger phenomena like incorruptible bodies or the stigmata of a saint or something like that, or Eucharistic miracles where this might inspire people's faith and draw them closer to Christ, or you have apparitions of Mary in general, like Our Lady of Fatima. But the Church actually handles these things really well in the sense that we are not obliged as Catholic faithful to believe in such things. Of course, the words and works of Jesus Christ is found in the Gospels. Those are things that by faith we're obliged to believe. But modern miracles, we don't have to believe in them at all if they're a little bit confusing or bothersome or distracting. And it sounds like that's the case with Sarah's daughter here. So, you know, I think you can take it as far as to say that if you were a Catholic and you didn't believe in Our Lady of Guadalupe, that image you thought was just a painting and not really a divine occurrence on the Tilma of Juan Diego, you could say that you could still be a good Catholic if you had that opinion. Or you could say, all those miracles at Lourdes, those 70 cures and the 7,000 remarkable cures, you know, science doesn't know what it doesn't know yet. And someday they'll have explanations for all those things, but right now they don't. And they're not really miracles. You could say that and you could still be a good Catholic. And, you know, like Fatima, you could say, well, this isn't a true apparition of Mary or this isn't anything. The children are just making it up. You could technically hold that opinion and still be a good Catholic. But the point is that when it comes to private revelation, to these modern miracles, we don't have to believe in them at all if we find them a little bit tricky or troubling. So, Sarah, I would give that same advice to your daughter, saying that if she finds, you know, this event, this miracle of the Son of Fatima to be a little bit strange and a little bit and very different, and it is, it's very different from anything else we have in the history of the Catholic Church. If she finds it so different that it couldn't, you know, possibly be something to believe in, she can easily discard it and she continue on with her Catholic faith just as well. So hopefully that advice will help her. And thank you, Sarah, for that great question. And if you have a question for the Miracle Hunter, you can send me an email to questions@miraclehunter.com, and maybe we'll be answering your question on the air next week. Let's take a look at the 365 Days with Mary project. We do this every week. We look at the Marian devotion that lines up exactly to the day's date. Of course, we have Fatima on May 13th, or October 13th, as it were, the Sun Miracle of Fatima, or Our Lady of Guadalupe, December 12th, or Lourdes, February 11th, or any number of others throughout the year. They all line up. There's a different one that lines up to each day of the calendar year. And so for today's date, we've got the Holy Mary of the Plains from Santa Rosa in Argentina in the year 1986. And the story goes that the miraculous image and title of Santa Maria of El Pueblo dates back to 1632, for this was the first time when the humble priest and religious Franciscan friar Sebastian Gallegos, skilled and inspired sculptor, who lived in the convent of San Francisco de Grande, city of Queretaro, he carved in his studio with his own hands the image depicting the Blessed Virgin Mary in the mystery of the Immaculate Conception. In October 16, 1998, a replica was placed at the back of Santa Rosa Cathedral, surrounded by flags and witnessed by government officials. And from that day forward, October 16th has been Santa Maria de la Pampas Day of Commemoration, and that is the Holy Mary of the Plains, or Las Pampas, from Santa Rosa in Argentina in the year 1986. For more information on this devotion or any of the hundreds of other Marian devotions from around the world, you can connect to the page 365 Days with Mary. You can download the free app, or you can get the book, or you can join the Facebook feed with 10,000 other followers of people who like to find out who the Marian devotion is each and every day. Let's take a look at the miracles of the saints, particularly in this segment of They Might Be Saints. Now, John Paul I, the smiling pope as he's known, he's going to be beatified after a miracle was approved by Pope Francis. And the miracle attributed to his intercession is the 2011 healing of a girl in the Archdiocese of Buenos Aires, Argentina, from a severe form of encephalopathy, a disease affecting the brain. Now, Pope Francis, he recognized a miracle obtained through the intercession of his predecessor, Venerable John Paul I, who will now be declared blessed. and he's called by many to be the smiling pope. And John Paul I died unexpectedly on September 28, 1978, after just 33 days as pope. Now, a priority for his short pontificate was carrying forward the work of the Second Vatican Council. But even before he was elected pope, Albino Luciani was known for his humility, his emphasis on spiritual poverty, and his dedication to teaching the faith in an understandable manner. And so, according to a report this week from an Italian newspaper, John Paul may be beatified before Easter. The beatification ceremonies usually take place in the country most associated with the life of the blessed, as Pope John Paul I is likely to be beatified at the Vatican by Pope Francis. The miracle attributed to John Paul I's intercession is the 2011 healing of a girl in the Archdiocese of Buenos Aires, Argentina, from a severe form of encephalopathy, a disease affecting the brain. Now, last year, Pope Francis instituted a Vatican foundation to promote the thought and teachings of Venerable John Paul I. So in an article published in Observatorio Romano at this time, the Secretary of State wrote that Pope John Paul I and was and remains a reference point in the history of the Universal Church, the importance of which, as St. John Paul II pointed out, is universally proportional to the duration of his very short pontificate, inversely proportional to the duration of his very short pontificate. And so we have this miracle that's been validated, or will be validated officially, and will lead to his beatification and hopefully someday his canonization. Let's take a look at the might-be saint of the day. We do this every week where we talk about somebody on the path to sainthood, servant of God, venerable, blessed, before they become a saint. This lines up to my television show, They Might Be Saints, which airs on EWTN on Mondays at 11:30 a.m. Eastern Time or Fridays at 5 p.m. Eastern Time. People can find out more about this television show and my new book, They Might Be Saints, which is out on EWTNRC.com. They can also go to theymightbesaints.com for more information about these various ways we talk about people who might be saints. So on today's program, we're looking at Blessed Richard Crayaugh from Ireland, who lived from 1523 to 1586. And the story goes that Richard was born in 1523 in Limerick, Ireland, and he was the son of a wealthy merchant. Now, as a young man, Richard worked in his father's business, but he felt a call to the priesthood, and he studied at the University of Louvain in Belgium, where he was known to be an excellent student. He was ordained in 1555. And then he returned to Limerick in 1556 and opened a school in this Dominican friary that was abandoned there. And he was chosen as Archbishop of Armagh in Ireland on Low Sunday in 1564. Now, he was arrested in December of that year for a crime of acknowledging the authority of the Pope over the Church. And after several months in prison and multiple interrogations, Crayaugh escaped from the Tower of London in April of 1565 and fled to Louvain again. And he went from there to Spain and then back to Ireland in 1566, and he resumed his ministry and preaching peace between the Irish and the English. And he was arrested in April of 1567 in Kinalea, Ireland, and a jury there refused to convict Richard of anything, and his jailer helped him escape. But in October of 67, Richard was arrested again and imprisoned again in the Tower of London. He was kept chained, periodically interrogated, and systematically abused for years. He lost all his teeth and the use of one leg, and Richard was released on bail in March of 1570, and he returned to Ireland, where he resumed his ministry. He was arrested again in May of 1574, imprisoned in Dublin until 1575, at which point he was returned to the Tower of London, where he stayed until his death. While he was there, where he was unchained for different periods, he would minister to the other prisoners. He's considered a martyr, and because he was possibly poisoned, although that's never been confirmed, on October 14th, he died in the Tower of London in England. And he was beatified by Pope John Paul II in 1992, and with one miracle, someday he'll be declared a saint. And so that was Blessed Richard Crayaugh from Ireland. He's our might-be saint of the day. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we'll be looking at Oscar Delgado's purgatory film called Purgatory, nationally released on October 25th and 28th in theaters everywhere. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. Every year around the month of November, we turn our attention in a special way to the holy souls of purgatory. And people often began to think about their own lives, what will happen in that great unknown after death. And there's a brand new film out, appropriately named Purgatory, that will be released in a national release on October 25th and 28th. For people, Catholics and otherwise, can reconsider those thoughts about what about purgatory anyway? And we have the producer of this brand new film, and I've seen the film, and I encourage people to check this out. The producer is Oscar Delgado. Welcome to the show today, Oscar.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you for having me. Thank you so much.
And so this is an exciting thing, and I have to ask the question. We have this new film, Purgatory, coming out October 25th and 28th. What inspired you to turn your attention to purgatory? I think that oftentimes you'll see in a lot of movies, they'll point people's eyes towards heaven or scare them with images of hell. What made you point your attention to that spot in the middle?
Well, it's very interesting. That's a great question, Michael. Well, our producer, Michael, who seems to be a very good name, we were talking, and we wanted to do something that really speaks to people's lives, you know what I mean? So we always talk about their happiness and all these other things that people want to strive for, but very little is talked about, like, well, okay, this is your life now. What happens after? What happens in eternity? What is it that we're striving for ultimately? And so talking with Michael, we decided, you know what, purgatory would be a great topic to talk about. And, you know, this before all these other things started happening, as you know, films take a couple of years to put together. And so we started researching it and just then decided, you know, this would be a great topic. And obviously, unfortunately, with everything that's going on now, death is everywhere and in a sense. And so it makes us think more about what our lives, the lives that we're leading right now and where we are headed. And so we think it's an appropriate topic. And so that's kind of like the genesis of how this all began, this journey.
So let's talk a little bit about purgatory itself. You know, this is obviously on EWTN radio, so you're going to get mostly Catholic listeners who are familiar with it. But for a lot of people, maybe even some Catholics, you know, we've all got heaven and hell. We figure that part out, the up or down of it all. What is purgatory? What is church teaching on what exactly is purgatory?
Well, purgatory is where we go if we're not completely... let me back up. When you get to heaven, you know, we're hoping... Everything has to be spotless. Everything in heaven is spotless. There is no sin. There is no stain. There's nothing. So if we don't quite make it there at the time of our death, obviously we have to be cleansed in a sense. You know, we have to get those things that we did not work out in our own lives at that point to go through in a cleansing process, in a way of kind of reparation, everything that we've not been able to atone for, you know, so... That's what purgatory basically is, to try to get us ready to meet God. And I think that that is the process of trying to filter out all those things that will hinder us before we get into heaven. So I try to make
Absolutely.
It very...
We're talking today with Oscar Delgado, the producer of Purgatory, a brand new film nationally released on October 25th and 28th in theaters. When we reflect on the concept of purgatory, we have Catholics who often embrace this or acknowledge this idea, but many Protestants don't. And while we can all sort of reflect on the idea that we're all sinners, we all need cleansing before we're face-to-face with God, that seems to make some sense, I think, to everyone. Where does this concept of purgatory come from? Is it found in the Bible, or is it sort of a medieval invention of the Catholic Church?
No, it's found in the Bible, and there's people praying for the dead. I mean, there's different scriptures in the Bible about talking and praying for the dead. Right off the bat, I don't remember the exact scripture, but there is some in there that talk about, I think Maccabees is one of them, the talk and praying for the dead. It's important. It's throughout in the various parts in Holy Scripture to talk about praying for the dead.
And absolutely. And one of the things that I find really interesting is even in the catacombs, where you have the remnants of early Christianity, on the walls you have inscriptions and mosaics and reference to pray for us, pray for those who have died. So the concept of if somebody had gone to heaven or hell, they wouldn't need any prayers. Prayers wouldn't do anything for them. But in Purgatory, of course, prayers are needed for those holy souls. And let's turn to the film Purgatory, which is nationally released on October 25th and 28th. This is a tough concept to portray, this middle ground between heaven and hell. How did you go about telling the story of the meaning of purgatory or the interaction that we have here on earth with purgatory?
Well, we based a lot of the film on Fula Hurek. Who's a mystic and a philosopher and an intellectual, and believe it or not, started out as an atheist. And through her writings and through her mystical experiences, she began to give testimony and testament to purgatory in and of itself. So she began writing down in a book what is it that she was experiencing and taking us through some of the things that she experienced and in purgatory and what she saw. And it's just fascinating. The book goes through those incidents and goes through those beautiful experiences. And I just, for people to go see it, it kind of really does open their eyes, because this is coming from a perspective of somebody that was not a believer and really, in effect, a little bit anti-Catholic. And then she came to embrace what it means to be Catholic. And again, and her charism or her writings were all about purgatory, and so we decided to focus on her writings and her mystical experiences and to tell it through her eyes what purgatory, what happens and what it's about.
Absolutely. We're talking today with Oscar Delgado, the producer of the new film Purgatory, nationally released in theaters on October 25th and 28th. And Oscar, who is the target audience for this? Who would enjoy seeing this film? Are we looking mostly at Catholics who have been grown up with the concept of purgatory, or are we looking at other people who might not have ever heard the term before?
Well, I think that we're trying to make it more of a general release. Yes, Catholics would, I think, be very intrigued, and they know about purgatory. But there's other people that, you know, again, with our situation today, I mean, there is that questioning or there. Searching about what happens when we're dead, you know, what happens to our soul. And it is immortal, our soul. And I think that this is the target for people that just want to learn a little bit more or kind of to think about it. You know, we should think about, there's a very famous saying that every year we pass the date of our death, you know what I mean? So it's an important thing to think about. And I think people more and more are turning to those type of thoughts and those type of reflections, to be able to grasp, you know, what happens. And so I think that this is one of those things that we hope that other people kind of look and experience in watching the film, what happens to our souls. And also hopefully that makes us realize, you know, the life here is limited and we have a finite time to make the most of it and to do what we can to be and live the gospel message.
Absolutely. It is truly the biggest of all questions. What happens when we die? Every single person on earth has to grapple with that. I think that's a universal thing that that everyone needs to know. And that's why this film has universal appeal, because what about those people who aren't saints? What about those people who aren't destined for hell? What about those people who are right in the middle? What happens to them? The film Purgatory addresses that in a big way. And Oscar, I produce some programs for EWTN, and I always enjoy seeing when my stuff comes out, and I always have sort of favorite scenes that are created, where the actors give the best performance, or the script writing is the best, or the camera angle or the shot is just perfect. What were your favorite scenes from the film Purgatory?
Well, there's a couple, but I think the one that stands out was when they're at a table, and in the opening scene, or the second scene in the film, where they're sitting around and talking about what happens after death. And Fulak Horak, the actress, I mean, plays Fulak Horak. She is there, and she starts getting agitated and more agitated because she knows the truth about everything, and she's becoming more angry. And then she's like, you know what? The truth is there is life after death. There is there is something greater than what we see here. And then she bolts out of the room and everybody's stunned. It's like, what happened? You know, she was in this intellectual, this thought of as like an incredible philosopher and elitist and everything. And she just runs out and tries to, she counteracts everything that everybody else thought about her. And I thought that was a very powerful scene. And because it's like what our society is living now, right? They all kind of believe that, yeah, you're a good person, you're going to go to heaven. There's like really nothing. But she, at that time in the 30s, is like trying to grapple with the same thing and saying, no, this is not true. This is false. And so at that point marked her entrance into something deeper and really opening the eyes to these intellectuals about the importance of really believing in the afterlife.
Absolutely. We're talking today with Oscar Delgado, producer of the brand new film Purgatory, whose national release is on October 25th and 28th in theaters everywhere. And so for people who want to find out more about this film, this is such an interesting topic, Purgatory, and unfortunately, it's a topic that many people don't give a lot of thought to or any thought to. So this is really important that people learn more and check this thing out. Where can they go? What's a good website or other place with more information on how to learn more, and then how do they see it?
Yeah, purgatorymovie.com, it's the website, and then it's a national release in the theaters on October 25th. It's a phantom release, so there are different times, but October 25th and October 28th, just go to the website, and they'll tell you, like, your location is near you. It is a national release. Close to almost 1,000 theaters are going to carry it, and so you just got to look at the times. Again, it's only for 2 days, October 25th and October 28th. So those are the 2 days that that you can go and, you know, bring your church group or bring other friends that, you know what, let's go check out the afterlife, what happens. And so hopefully that would be something that there'd be a lot of interest in.
Absolutely. Well, we're so grateful to you, Oscar Delgado, the producer of this brand new film, Purgatory, for putting this together in the first place and for joining us on today's program.
My pleasure, Michael. Thank you for having me.
God bless. That is Oscar Delgado, producer of the new film Purgatory, nationally released on October 25th and 28th in theaters everywhere. Go to purgatorymovie.com for more information. And that's all the time we have for today's show. If you missed any of this episode or want to catch up on past episodes, you can go to ewtn.com/radio. Check out the audio archives, search for Miracle Hunter, or download the free EWTN app. I'd like to thank our guest, Oscar Delgado, producer of Purgatory, which is a film which will be released nationally on October 25th and 28th in theaters everywhere, and Michael Litchens, talking to us about Encounters with Angels, that brand new book from Odile Aumont from Sophia Institute Press. Sign up for the newsletter on MiracleHunter.com for more information on miracle stories, where I'll be speaking next, upcoming book releases, and more. And speaking of that, my brand new book, They Might Be Saints, is out this week. 24 Blesseds and Venerables are featured in that book. I'm going to be on EWTN Live and Bookmark to talk about it. In order to get the book, go to EWTN Religious Catalog at EWTNRC.com. And I'd like to thank you for joining me today on Miracle Hunter, where from claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt. Talk to you next week.